closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. It's me, Nick Paul, and I actually have Simon Cornell today. Hi, Simon.
Hey, Nick. How's it going? It's good to be back.
Good. I'm staying up for you. It's a little after 10 o'clock LA time, but you're not in LA. Where are you at?
I'm in Adelaide, South Australia. It is 4:40 p.m. here right now. Notice the non-even hour difference in time zones. I'm not like a number of hours away because Adelaide is one of the very few places that has like a half hour time zone difference from Melbourne to Sydney.
Yeah, 10:10 for me right now.
Yeah,
that's very strange.
Or is it 4:40? Normally, if I was in Melbourne, it'd be like 5:10. It's like, oh, that's a bunch of hours. Whereas this is a bunch of hours and a half hour, which is super strange.
I was literally performing at the Magic Castle, and you gave me some stuff that you were nice enough to let me borrow some Rubik's Cubes. And I'm like, all right, I'll see you later. And you're like, I gotta go. I'm busy. I'm like, okay, I'll see you later. And then literally I see on Facebook the next day that you're in Australia.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. There were a lot of things that were funny about that interaction because you were going, I need a Rubik's Cube or two. What was it, one or two? I forget what you needed.
I traditionally use like the classic actual Rubik's Cube, and I changed the routine up, and so I needed speed cubes, and I needed like four. And it turns out I only had like two or three, so I decided I was going to do this literally 3 hours before my first castle show, and it's very hard to find a speed cube in a store here, so I knew you and friends had it, so boring part of the story, but that's the reason we interacted.
But it's context, and because you knew I live opposite the Magic Castle, and I was in town, so you were like, hey, can I get a speed cube? I'm like, no problem, fam, gotcha. And then I realized, I was thinking, well, I don't know, because there's different sizes, different kinds, different everything. So I just dropped off a box of, I think, a dozen different ones because I have a whole bunch.
I have it right next to me right now.
Oh, yeah. So, because again, when you're working on a routine, back when I first started working on Rubik's Cube Magic, there's no real way to figure it out other than buy lots of them, try lots of them, and figure out all the nuances and details. So I have lots of unused cubes that is there as in sort of the raw materials pile of my apartment. So just figured, well, I don't know exactly what you need or which one might work, so I'll just drop off a shitload of them, which you weren't expecting, which was funny.
No, I was expecting one cube, and you're like, here, take this giant bin. I gotta go.
Because I was in the middle of dashing off to, I think I was flying out that night. I think that's why I was in so much of a rush, because I was like getting ready for this trip. But that wasn't relevant to the conversation, so I didn't bother mentioning it. Because, like, you need Rubik's Cubes. I need to go pack. Neither of us needs this information. This is extraneous data that doesn't need to be communicated.
There's such a major Zen story to that, in that you didn't feel the need to tell me about, like, this. Like, I ran into a magician recently. He, out of nowhere, I go, hey, how's it going, man? He's like, I just got back from South Carolina. I go, cool. Yeah, I don't need to know that.
Yeah, cool. Good for you.
I literally just got back from Brazil, but I didn't tell you that.
Whatever. And yeah, anyway. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, because in that interaction, there was like no benefit for you or me for you to know that I was about to fly to Australia in 4 hours' time.
It's like, that's a very polite thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we try to be considerate, right? You just needed cubes. And that's one of the things that I realized recently in a few personal interactions, that having a background in pro magic, like putting on shows, creating shows, it's insanely difficult. It's so involved. So much shit happens. It's so stressful and intense. And I know from that experience, like I knew you were about to do shows. You're in pre-show prep mode. I know what that's like. You just need the thing and absolutely no other interruptions or distractions. And because I know what that's like, it's very easy to be empathic of that. And I'm like, I got you, fam. You just need the shit. And then you need me to fuck off out of your space. That's what you need. I got you. That's what I'm going to deliver. Because I'm often in that place. And most people don't get that. And they want to stay and chat and let you know they got back from South Carolina. And like, I'm like, go away. I need to, the amount of shit I need to do in the next 45 minutes, you wouldn't even believe.
Yeah, so to like, be fair, you're often building your show 10 minutes. The show we did in... Yeah. in May to the SmackDown show, you were literally building the our closer to the show about 5 minutes before we were about to walk on stage.
Yep. That's not even an exaggeration. Like, it was literally about 5 minutes. It was still being finalized.
We were walking around Walmart 30 minutes before show, and I go, hey, guys, we should get back to the theater.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I've got an idea to make this prop better. I think I can do it in time. And we did. It's okay. We got there. It was good.
I've adjusted to it.
But yeah, and it was funny when I realized how that looked from your perspective. That, like, yeah, we were chatting, catching up in Hollywood, dropping off some cubes to a buddy. Next day, yeah, Facebook post about who's in Australia right now because I'm here. that would have seemed very weird.
I was just confused about my sense of space and time because I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, did I see him yesterday? Because I was doing you're doing like 12 shows, and then I was hopping over to do 4 shows at Magic Bar a couple days later. So I didn't know what day it was or what was happening. So it was very much in the same boat, but it's, it's very confusing.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting because it's also weird because to most people, flying from the US to Australia is a major life event. It's a 16-hour flight. To most people in the US or Europe, that's a very, that's an almost unthinkably long journey. And so to be just like, yeah, whatevs, I'm here now. Anyway, so as we were saying, like, no main interruption.
Yeah, well, I'm becoming you because, we just did, I was in southern Chile, then middle of Chile, then Peru, then LAX to get home on a ship. And then we got to go back and do that in a couple of days, and it's just like, all right, yep, 3 flights, one's 13 hours, awesome, good, all right, I'll bring a book. And like a year or two later, I would be in such panic mode, but now it's becoming absurdly normal, and it's now's the point where I'm like, you know what, I think I need to start doing something else.
This might be physically, emotionally unsustainable.
Yeah, because you're in it and you're doing it, and like, you've worked so hard to get to this point in your career. You're like, all right, this is it. I'm not going to think about it. This is great. And then you kind of take a moment to stop and think about it and go, oh no, this is actually insane.
Yeah.
So people go crazy.
Yeah. There's nothing resembling a normal sort of stable, connected life. You're just now living out of the suitcase forever. But hey, it could be so much worse. Right?
It could be
worse. Yada, yada, yada.
We talked about this, but I mean, I am pivoting genuinely. I am trying to go, okay, because oddly enough, I was thinking about just kind of quitting ships altogether. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably not the best. I don't think our agent would be happy, and I'm definitely not going to do that. But certainly kind of limiting availability as to how much I want to be on ships. Because that's the weird thing about working on, at least with our agency, is you could be working 52 weeks a year if you really wanted to. You really have to just stay up on top of your availabilities. And I'm kind of like, my wife and I are just getting to a point where we just got to, I think, be home a little bit more and not, if you travel to a gig, not being gone for 8 to 10 days, because it's a long time to be away for, which is ostensibly 2 shows. But what's funny, we were talking to a friend of ours and he's like, don't say anything. Because of the coronavirus, and it's a little bit funny, but at the same time, it's terrible because it's really going to wreak havoc and is starting to wreak havoc on the cruise industry. And the first
it's
thing to go
havoc on many industries right now.
Not just cruise, but a whole bunch of anything international, a whole bunch of trade shows. I was talking to a friend who does a lot of trade shows, and he's like, "Yeah, all these international ones are getting canceled." And we're going to feel it next year too.
Sorry, you go.
No, I'm just saying we're going to start to feel it next year because they book often a year in advance with cruise ships, and entertainment is the first thing on the chopping block.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, coronavirus, I've got a friend here who's doing a show, and there is a certain secret item he needs a couple of per show that he's running low on, can only get them from a factory in China, and all shipments have been frozen. And so he's now kind of like starting to feel the repercussions. He needs to find a different way to do this thing, a really significant thing in the show, because he can't get the supplies of things he need because China's shutting down lots of shipping, including manufacturing and supplies.
Yeah, same thing. A friend of ours who has something come out with Vanishing Ink, and they just got an email that said, yeah, we we were supposed to get a test of it, or a test of, you know, what the product was going to be, and we can't. The whole factory shut down.
Yeah, shit's intense.
I mean, if it's trickling into magic, can you imagine how much it's trickling into things that actually matter?
Well, I still remember, it's funny, this was about 8-9 years ago, because as we know, I do a lot of stuff involving magnets. They're a very convenient device for lots of craft and design things in magic or otherwise. And again, that famous Pete Holmes sketch about the guy who thinks all magic is done with magnets. In my show, it's kind of true. It's like very nearly the actual truth. Like, the magnets are never the core method, but they're just a convenient way to, you have a thing that needs to be here, then later on you need to put it over here. Boom, magnets is going to be in exactly the right place it needs to be before you do the actual magical thing. And so about, oh God, maybe 7-8 years ago, basically China, which is one of the world's leading suppliers of neodymium, which is one of the elements used in neodymium iron boron magnets, which are the best ones, basically massively raised their neodymium tariffs. And instantly the price of all the magnets I was often buying shot up. And it was the first time where like a trade regulations price hike affected me directly in terms of international trade relations. I was like, God damn it. Neodymium taxes are up on Chinese exports. This hurts my magic tricks.
Very specific problem to have.
Yeah.
Well, I was just at Magic Bar and David Kovac was performing, and he had a joke that just went over everybody's heads, just talking about how
that does sound like David Kovac.
Yeah. Most of his show, which in,
I love it. After. It's great. He's such a funny
talking
guy.
To him after, he's like, very those are my favorite moments because, you know, he just sits in it. He's so good at just sitting in it. But one of them is, it turns out rare earth magnets really aren't that rare. And like nobody in the audience laughs or even gets it. That, you know, you can find magnets anywhere. They just crickets, and it was just a wonderful moment because we looked at each other and just started laughing.
It's like, and no one even knows what a rare earth magnet is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the other question. Fun fact, do you know why they're called rare earth magnets?
I don't.
Mainly because neodymium, the chemical element, is one of the rare earth elements. It's a section of the periodic table known as the rare earths. There's like the metals, the metalloids, the noble gases, you know, there's all these like familiar chunks of the periodic table, one of which is the rare earths, which I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% definitive on this, but they're called that because they are more rarely found in the Earth's crust than e.g. like iron and carbon and the really common stuff. They are relatively rare compared to all the bulk of the Earth's crust. So there you go.
And see, rare earth magnets are made of them. You don't just hear magicians complaining about nothingness. You learn about science too.
Right? It's win-win. It's a very niche audience, but it's served. But yeah, so I'm in Australia doing against my own recommendations on this very podcast, being part of a show in the Adelaide Fringe Festival. There is absolutely an episode. I know this because someone I bumped into in Adelaide pointed this out to me by sending me a video clip listening to me on this podcast, how many episodes, going, yeah, don't do Adelaide Fringe. It's a bad idea. So hi from Adelaide Fringe, where I'm failing to take my own advice.
Are you doing a solo show or are you doing a group show?
No, God, no. Wouldn't be doing a solo show. Although having said that, come back next year to me doing a solo show in Adelaide Fringe. The reason I'm here against normally my advice is, number one, I'm not doing a solo show. I'm part of a group show that someone else is producing. That's part one. I'm not self-producing. Self-producing is a goddamn nightmare. Often worth doing, but it's brutal. It's grueling. We all know what that's like. Number two, as a consequence, I have no financial risk. I might not make a lot of money depending on how the show sells, but all my expenses are covered. Someone else paid for me to come here, flights, accommodation, whatever. So my risk is minimal. And yeah, I just don't have the overhead and hassle of having to be responsible for everything that goes into producing a show. I just have to perform and do a decent job and work on workshop material. And then the final thing, it's a group show, so it's more fun. Again, collaborative projects, as we well know, are way more fun than solo projects. You get to share the good times, commiserate the bad times together. And then finally, and it's a little thing that's only a thing you really know about if you've done fringe festivals, is the fact that we have a venue to ourselves. We're not sharing the venue with 6 other shows. So we can just move in, set up, and have our space, and that's our space for the whole run. And that's such a game changer in terms of stress, hassle, and quality of life that it's actually been a fun time. I'm actually enjoying it. This is an unheard of concept at a Fringe, particularly Adelaide.
Yeah, that is the thing they kind of don't really tell you at Fringe. It's like, you got about 15 minutes to get in and out of the theater with all your crap.
Yeah, and that's a significant... It's doable. You know, you can absolutely do it, but god damn, it makes the whole... Yeah, you've got to bring all your gear to the venue, set it up, pack it down, whereas because we have our own venue for this show, we can just leave everything set up, and it's such a game changer. And again, we're staying near the city, so we're well located. It's a short walk to the shows each day. Then when we're done, we're near everything we want to hang out with. And also, I know a bunch of people here, apart from the people in the show. There's people in other shows who are really great friends. Like Dom is here, you know, past guest on this podcast. So we're all hanging out a lot, and it's a much better time.
The now world-famous Dom Chambers.
Right? None of us are making a lot of money, but it's a good time at least. And the main reason I'm here is because I'm doing this really big project in June at the Oceanside Museum of Art that we mentioned before. And for that, we're going to be doing a lot of promo in April and May, like March, April, May. And for that, I want to work on really grinding the experience on that material. And this is a perfect chance for it because we're doing 5 to 7 shows a night, Shades of Macau there. But unlike Macau, it's a fun environment with fun people. Around the place. You know, there's fun things going on. Adelaide's a nice city. It's a really relaxed city, sometimes too relaxed. Some people find it boring to live there, but during Fringe, a lot of great stuff, a lot of great people. The weather's beautiful, and I'm grinding in all the material, getting that all-important experience. So that's why I said yes to this one, and it's been working out really well.
That's good. Yeah, I wasn't sure why you were going back to the land down under. So,
well, it's that old saying about, I think this is translated from Chinese originally. The saying is, if a cat sits on a hot stove and gets burned, meow, burnt cat, that cat has now learns never to sit on a hot stove again. That cat's learned that. But it also won't sit on a cold stove either, because the two look the same until you get there. So just because a thing was bad one time, usually that might be a good idea to avoid it, but the thing that looks very similar from the outside might be a totally different experience. And that's very much what Adelaide has been for me this time around. It's the cold stove this time rather than the hot stove.
There's a lot of Chinese jokes I want to make right there, but I'm not going to because they're suffering right now.
Oh, man, yeah. True that.
Can you imagine if we were in, like, we always bring up House of Magic in Macau on this podcast because it's a bingo card, but can you... Like, this is the first time I've really thought about it and go, you know, my heart goes out to everybody, you know, tourists and people there who are dealing with all that. Mm. But can you imagine if we were just trapped there and it's like, okay, you're not doing shows anymore. You're now in quarantine. that could have very possibly been the situation.
I mean, in hindsight, that makes me think of that 1 week off we had unexpectedly. I don't know. Quarantine could have been kind of a glorious blessing. I think I would have loved it compared to the schedule that was happening.
I was listening to NPR today, and they, you know, they had some people that were being treated in quarantine. They were interviewing Chinese people, and they're like, yeah, it's fine. It's a shame I can't see my family, but I have lots of work to do. I'm just taking online courses.
I mean, that's the attitude. Go for it. That's the good stuff. It's like being on ships. Use the time effectively.
And you know what's sad is I heard that, and I'm like, oh, he's using his time way more effectively than I do on ships. When I am not in quarantine, but kind of feels like I am.
Mm. It's not dissimilar. You're confined to an area. You can't really leave. You don't necessarily want to be there.
We've done Silver Sea and twice now, and we're going back. I'm going to Viking next week, but it's fine. It's a rich upper class rich people, white people, but they're nice. But man, it's such a small ship, so much smaller than I'm used to doing. It's only like 300 guests, if that. Yeah. I'm used to minimum 1,000, if not 3,000 guests on a ship. And you know, when it's rocky outside, it feels like you're on the Tower of Terror. It's the first ship I've ever felt like kind of trapped on, because it feels like, okay, the things to do today are trivia at 4:45 and lunch and dinner and go to the gym in between those things, and that's it. There's like no other activities planned. And it really feels, it's definitely a 4-star prison in many many regards. Feels like it, at least.
Oh, five stars at least. Go on, they're very nice.
Yeah, I don't know how many stars Silver Sea does, but they do a great job with the food and the people are very nice. But
I think Silver Sea, I mean, Silver Sea Region and Seaborne are like claimed as 6-star, and I think they probably deliver it in terms of just the amount of facilities and amenities and quality of food and everything. They're really up there. It is one. It is one of the nice things.
6-star is a stretch for me, but
yeah, well, solid 5.
I really like doing the Vikings. They're nice, and it's like living on an IKEA for a week. It's
right, but like a nicer IKEA, like an IKEA with sort of more earth tones and. Like warm fires in the corner.
Less people in a relationship fighting over what type of couch they should get.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing. You start walking at IKEA, and by the time you get to the end, if it's not you, it's some other couple just arguing about, you know, the things you are or are not purchasing.
Mm. So meanwhile, I have a story. I have some content. I got some good stuff.
It's my favorite word.
This is the fire story. So this happened about a week ago. This is in Adelaide. It turned up in Adelaide Fringe. Yeah. Being part of the show. So the show is a cool concept. It's called the... I mean, when's this episode going to come out, Nick?
Every episode, Simon, airs on the 1st and the 15th of every month. And I've stuck to that for about a year now.
Perfect. I love it. Now that I have this information for the first time ever, I can hold on to that.
I've said it many times on this podcast.
Oh, I believe it. that was me doing self burn sarcasm about my inability to register and retain information. So if you listen to this podcast on the 1st and are still in Adelaide, come see the show. It's great. It's called The Extraordinary Guests of Hotel Richmond. It's in a venue called Hotel Richmond, unsurprisingly. It's a venue in Rundle Mall, like right in the middle of Adelaide, and it's a little boutique hotel. It's a cool space. And the concept is you buy a ticket, you go up to the second floor. There are 4 hotel rooms on this floor, and each one has been converted to be a different, very different magic venue. You go into each room one by one and see a different 15-minute magic show by a very different kind of performer. And that's the experience. You meet the extraordinary guests of the hotel and see 4 micro 15-minute magic shows as part of a one hour and a bit experience because there's travel time between the rooms. And it's really cool. It's very different performers. Each of the rooms is set up really differently. It's a really fun experience. People love it. Check it out. It's a good time. I'm currently one of the people. I won't be by the time the 1st happens because I have to fly back for a ship gig because that's a thing. And we're changing the run halfway through. So if people see it in the first couple of weeks, they can come back in the second couple of weeks and see a mostly different show with different performers. And so it's a cool concept. And then during one of the shows, actually, it was the opening weekend. So we had our opening night was, I think, the Friday night. An opening weekend, as you know, it's so important. That's when you try and you give away tickets if necessary to get full houses because you want word of mouth to build on the buzz from that first weekend to sell tickets for the rest of the run. And it's our Saturday night. And to make the business model work, because you only have 30 people per room. So there's actually 5 shows a night. So group one sees show number one. Goes into show 2, then group 2 arrives and sees show number 1. So the groups are kind of following each other through the sequence with about a 15-minute gap in between, and we just pump them through. So 5 sets a night on weekdays, 7 a night on Fridays and Saturdays. And so it's the Saturday night. We're doing, I think, show number 1 or 2. It was the 1st or 2nd of the night of what was going to be 7 sets, and the fire alarm goes off. So it's, you know, incredibly loud, no way to keep performing through this piercing noise. And we reacted the way you normally react to a fire alarm, going, ugh, it's a mistake, or it's a drill, or someone's left the toaster on, or whatever. But we have to evacuate. There's no way to keep doing the shows. Even if it's a drill, you have to take it seriously. And again, it won't be a drill in a hotel. In a ship, it might be a drill, but here it's going to be someone left their toaster on. And so we go, all right, everyone, let's get out. And as we walk down the stairs, because we're not using the lifts, the elevators, they're off, we get down to level 1. And there is smoke in the hotel, like in the corridors. And the windows are open, so we don't know where it's coming from, but it is absolutely clearly very smoky. We go, oh, shit. Get down to the ground floor. It's even smokier. Get outside, even smokier still. And what it turns out has happened is a building 2 doors down has completely gone up in flames. Like, there is smoke billowing out the windows of its first floor. Just flooding the area. You can't see any flames visible, but this thing was just pouring smoke, clearly really on fire inside. And meanwhile, then the fire brigade's turning up. They're starting to fight it. And then the police very quickly evacuate the entire area because it turns out that building has a lot of potentially toxic plastic in it, which so now these smoke, this smoke is actually likely to be very, very dangerous. So they evacuate the entire like two city blocks around this area. And we quickly realize, yeah, there's no more shows tonight. This is just sealed off for a long, long time. But of course, all our stuff's still in there, like our room keys, our all our gear for the night, phone chargers, everything. So we just kind of went, all right, let's make the best of it. Go and enjoy the fringe, and we'll have to deal with refunding tickets or giving people replacement tickets. So it's a hell of a way to have to cancel a night of shows when the building nearby has gone up in flames and has created a genuinely very hazardous situation from toxic smoke.
Do you guys have Yelp? Because I'm sure you'll at least get one angry Yelp review.
We can't show is unsatisfactory.
But we can't come because the building next door is on fire.
I would believe it. But what That's was weird was amazing. Well, it also sucked because, again, opening weekend, it's when you want the publicity, when you want things to happen. But silver lining, because of the fire, Tim, the producer, got on top of that and started sending out press releases. And we took a bunch of photos and we got a bunch of press coverage because of it that we wouldn't have, because we were the only show in that area. We're away from the main fringe hub. So things like, you know, magic show disappears in puff of smoke, you know, all that, all the good stuff.
Shows on fire, literally.
Exactly. All that stuff. So we got a few articles in the media that we wouldn't have got otherwise. So in a weird silver lining, in a weird way. And we got a good story.
Spontaneous combustion. How about spontaneous combustible magic?
Yeah.
I don't know. Exactly. That's not a winner.
That's all right. It's got potential. We'll workshop it. And look at us. And now we get a solid 10 minutes of content out of it. So really, we're just it's winning.
Dear God, stop saying content.
I mean, I'm hoping this clip, I never say the word content unironically, ever. It's always ironic. Even though it's accurate.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, what a world we live in.
Well, I think I ended the last time we chatted with how much I hated the phrase content, and now all I can think about anytime I hear content is me saying that and how that's going to come back to me in some way, in some fashion, you know, if I ever am doing some sort of weird Instagram or TikTok or YouTube promotion in the near future. I'd be like, yep. Yeah, that's ironic. I'm a hypocrite.
Well, I think the word content strikes me as much like the word synergy. It's a word that has a good, solid, relevant meaning that is useful for communication, but also gets turned into bullshit by sort of cynical overuse. You know, synergy was sort of corporate bullshit in the 80s, 90s and onwards. You know, yeah, we got to think about synergy. Yeah. Whereas the word makes sense. It's, you know, a system that's greater than the sum of the parts because those parts work really well together. And same with content. Yeah, you need stuff. It's a word for the things that go in a medium as opposed to the medium itself. That's a sensible idea. But it gets used cynically by marketing douchebags and all that stuff, so you end up with this bad association with it. I don't know. Linguistics. The thing.
This kind of goes into something that happened to me recently. So I was on on one of these cruise ships, and this gentleman comes up and talks to me. He's a big fan, and you know, it was very complimentary. I got to know him; he was very nice. And you know, we follow each other on Instagram. And then about a week or two later, he messages me because I notice he has a lot of followers. But he's just this dude, kind of. Okay. He's a travel blogger, but you can tell it's not really what he does full time.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, he has a lot of followers. That's interesting because I look and. Like, oh, he's got 100 likes on this photo, but he has, you know, way more followers, so that's strange. And he sends me a message. He's like, hey, man, I'm going to hook you up with my social media guy. And I go, all right, thanks, man, okay. Appreciate it. And I don't hear anything for a week or so. And then I wake up, I check my Instagram, and overnight I've gained about 2,000 followers.
Whoa.
And I'm like, oh, that's really weird. Okay. And then I remember this guy telling me that. And then literally by the hour, I'm gaining about 100, 200 Instagram followers. And it takes me about a day or two to realize what's going on. It's that this guy who works for him or who he hired originally their company does these promotions where it's like, hey, if you follow these 5 accounts and if you comment on their profiles, you'll be entered for a chance to win a new iPhone. And because I'm like, why is everybody commenting on my photos? iPhone 11. That's very strange. And then I finally, somebody tags them. So I hit, I mean, an extra 4,500 followers, give or take. And now I'm starting to see them drop off because none of them have won.
None of them actually care.
Yeah, I've lost about 1,000 followers. Yeah, in a week. They don't. They care. Could care less about me doing magic shows, or photos of my dog. And it's he reached out a couple days ago, and he goes, "Hey man, did you notice a jump in your followers?" And I just called it out, and I go, "Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it." But yeah, once none of them won the iPhone 11, they started unfollowing me. And he goes, "It's a that's part of the process. It's part of the process."
That's funny.
And it was very nice of him to do, but I'm like,
yeah,
it's on paper. Yeah, on paper it looks nice. I'm like, oh, okay, this guy's got a couple thousand followers. That's neat. But for me, well, I'm looking at it from like a ticket sales point of view, or like, you know, just any sort of monetization point of view. I'm like, all of these accounts are from like South America and from Africa, and they're real people. Mm. They're not bots, luckily, but they're not going to buy a ticket to see a show. It was just a very weird thing. And it showed me how gullible people on the internet are. It was just such a prime example of, oh, nobody knows how any of this works. Any of this technology works. They think they're going to win an iPhone if they follow me. And it was, very interesting.
It's actually funny. I mean, that's my naivete right there. I was like, oh, yeah, of course. They wouldn't actually ever give one out, would they? They don't even need to. They can just lie.
How are they going to know? Like, what rules and regulations are they following?
Yeah, that's business American freedom style. Freedom to screw people over if you want to and can get away with it.
There's a documentary right now that's out on HBO about how in the mid-90s the McDonald's Monopoly game was rigged, and not even McDonald's knew. And it's fascinating. Yeah,
that is it. I remember that game. Mm-hmm. Remember that thing?
They did it for a very long time until recently, until they figured this out. And I think recently they were like, oh, there was like a mob front or something going on with this. It was
holy shit.
Wild.
I'm going to check that out. But I mean, I have two thoughts about that social media following guy. I mean, one is that, to be fair, it's that idea that if you do want to artificially boost your follower count for whatever reason, obviously not ticket sales useful, but that will happen. You know, you'll gain 4,000, then 3,800 of them will unfollow you, but you will end up with a total long-term gain of about 200. And I think that's what he meant by part of the process, right? You have this massive influx, then it dies down. So like that 4,000 people, they were there in order to gain you the 200. They were just a means to an end of like, yep, you've gained about 200 now. Then you do that again next week and gain another 200. Once it dies down, then so on, so on, so on. And you end up with a long-term sustainable gain. But then the flip side is, you're right, that's absolutely relevant for your objective of like have people to promote to actually maybe buy stuff that you're selling in terms of ticket sales. But then that puts you in a relatively unusual position where, and this is something that's been on my mind, that's been really troubling me, that this is not a new thing for us to be talking about, but a trend in society now is when people research you, like say someone goes, oh, Magic Smackdown by Nick Paul. All right, let's check out this Nick Paul guy. Based on how many followers you are is one of the big metrics they will use to judge your worth. And go, oh, he's got like 200,000 followers. He must be good. I'll buy a ticket to SmackDown. Even if they don't follow you, they'll use your Instagram account or whatever, Twitter, to kind of assess your validity in the world. And that's where an artificially inflated follower count can actually be really productive. And it's fucked up. Like, it's absolutely bad. But this is currently a force in the world that is a thing that is worth thinking about. Whatever one does or doesn't do about it, it's a thing that's out there. It troubles me deeply because I'm worried it's going to lead to serious negative repercussions for the like quality of our society and civilization. It's very Black Mirror.
It's literally like having a Yelp rating above your head, or like being able to see, you know, for anybody to see how much money's in your bank account, you know, whether or not you're quote unquote successful. It's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's literally Black Mirror, like the whole credit score, you know, concept. You're reduced to a number now. And that's the thing that's becoming real. And so, I don't know. I don't like it, but I have considered like buying followers, just going to one of these social media guys and going, yeah, just like give me, you know, get me up to a very impressive looking follow account so that when casting people or potential ticket buying people or whatever look at my Instagram account, I look legit. Because I give zero shits, but dumb people do give shits.
I mean, it's ironic that it happened the week I was at the castle, because that was the week I had a couple TV bookers coming to see the show. That I got there, I cold emailed and got them in to come see the show. But I thought about that quite a bit of like, well, if they actually looked at my Instagram, this is a good time. I don't have a lot of followers by any means, but
and you know, they almost looks better than it did. They almost certainly did, because almost everyone, particularly in showbiz, does. It's a thing that people are more likely to than not now.
Well, you see it. I mean, it's an indirect advantage of a TV program, because then they go, oh, that's free advertising. This person's going to post that they run our show. That's advertising we don't have to pay for.
Completely. Yeah, more and more people are openly casting for social media following rather than acting ability or talent in whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very strange time, and it makes me want to quit everything the more I think about it, of just like, this is, what's the point of any of this? This isn't real anymore. It's in a completely different element of what it started. I mean, it's not even entertainment anymore. It's just, it's a rating above our heads. And I don't know.
Well, then
I'm trying not to be bitter about it, but that's just the only perspective I can really see it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, let's double down on SmackDown, make it a great show. It will end up with a good social media following. We'll buy a bunch of fake followers to promote it, and then we're doing a thing that we like. And the fact that the marketing is based on bullshit rather than substance isn't ideal, but as long as we're doing a thing we care about and are proud about while making a living and having a good quality of life, the fact that a lot of it was built on bullshit, again, not ideal, but better than not having all that. You know?
I don't think it was built on bullshit.
No, I mean, as in, if down the track, if this takes off, one of the reasons it'll take off is that we got the social media figured out and like bought a bunch of fake followers so it looked impressive, so people came to it, so then we got an actual following eventually, and then at that point it'll all be real. But there'll probably be a bunch of bullshit social media manipulation necessary to get there, because that's true of most things now in the world. Not everything, but more things as time goes on.
Yeah, we just need to hire a social media person.
You know what? Honestly, I think we should and will at some point. That's something I've been thinking about, is probably absolutely a step. Not now, but at some point along the journey.
Yeah, because it was a stretch for us just to like do an Instagram story when we were doing that casino in New Mexico of, hey,
completely,
come to the show.
Yeah, because we don't give a shit. We don't care about that garbage. But most people out there in the world, you know, the just generic rando people of the world, fine, wish them the best, but it's not a lot to talk about, are going to buy into that. It's, again, the same reason like Trump got elected, the same people. Most people are just dumb and believe whatever gets posted on Facebook. You know, these are the people that, for better or worse, we'd love to buy tickets and hope they enjoy the show, because we care about the show and want them to have a good experience. But how are we going to get them there? Probably dumb social media bullshit.
Yeah, I heard an interesting thing today about talking about older people really have a tough time deciphering fake articles. And like they can look at a tabloid in a grocery store and they're like, okay, that's probably all made up. But they can't decipher it if it's digital. And I think that's, you know, the biggest problem, not just for older people, but I think for a lot of this me gaining all these followers for these people that clearly had no clue that they were not going to win a new iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't know. In my mind, I'm looking at it from a critical perspective of, like, how would that even work? What are they going to do, find my phone number and call me? But for them, like, oh, cool, free phone. And that just, I think, speaks to a lot of what the internet is and a lot of a majority of the people on the internet. And, yeah, it's exactly how the election played out last time. Oh, yeah. Pro tips.
Let's do the segment.
Pro tips.
Pro tips, I think, is good shit. So I've been keeping a list now of things worth sharing as pro tips. This one, my one this month is a really simple one. It's a little one, but it's sometimes those like 1% edges on life that are the really good ones. It's not going to be life-changing, but here's the tip. Get a safety pin. In fact, get a bunch of safety pins and pin one to either inside the back pocket or inside the waistband if you don't have a back pocket, of your pants, or if it's a dress, it's got to be a waistband. But I have one, I'm wearing jeans right now, inside the back right pocket of my jeans, I've pinned a safety pin. Just go do that. Pin a safety pin into every pair of pants and or dress or skirt you own. And then sometime in the next 8 months, when you suddenly realize you are so fucking glad you have a safety pin, tweet me and thank me, because it'll happen. because now it's just always there. You now, you do that, you do one for every pair of pants, trousers, dress, skirt, whatever you own. And at one point when you realize, damn, I wish I had a safety pin right now, boom, you have one always. At no cost. Doesn't get in the way, doesn't itch you, doesn't catch on anything. It's just all gravy. Little thing, but the amount of times that, like, at least three times since I've done this 6 months ago, I've been like, oh, wait, I have a safety pin. This, say, this, you know, fixes whatever got broken or whatever. Or someone's like, oh, man, does anyone have a safety pin? Like, boom, save the day.
That's pretty amazing.
That's my pro tip.
Even non-magicians can take something from that, I think.
Yeah. Carry, like, because that's the thing. Having is this concept of carrying your phone and your keys and your wallet, you always need those all the time. Carrying, say, sunscreen, you don't need that all the time, but you need it frequently. But it's a big thing to carry. And there's this concept of what do I leave the house with? And it's a balance between inconvenient things, but that are useful enough to deal with the inconvenience of carrying them. And I've always been a big fan of things like, e.g., this safety pin pinned to your clothing that has zero inconvenience because it's, you don't even have to think about it. It's there. It doesn't effectively weighs nothing. Doesn't take up any space. That will not often be useful, but on those rare occasions it's useful, you're so damn glad you've got it. So there's zero. The key thing is there's zero cost to carrying it. It does, it has no drawbacks and a very, very slight but non-zero benefit to having it with you for the every now and then it's useful. I love stuff like that.
Interesting. Well, my pro tip would be a little bit bigger scale, more challenging, I think, for many performers, is if you don't need to bring somebody up on stage, don't. And if you can restructure what you're doing, don't bring somebody up on stage. I successfully pulled this. I did a 45-minute show, my B show, my second show that I do on cruise ships. I did 45 minutes and only brought one lady up on stage. And it was just to do close-up card tricks. And I didn't even need to, but it was just for validation that this, you know, was legit what I was doing. And it has changed the way I really perceive the show. And I've had to rewrite a few things. And sometimes I'm going into the audience to, you know, either get something signed or, you know, interact with somebody. But the number one thing I hear from the audience when I'm backstage is, oh, we don't want to sit up front because he'll pick us, or, you know, I hope I don't get picked. Most people in the audience don't want to be brought up on stage and they just want to be there and relax and have a good time. So I think you get like one, maybe two chances to bring somebody up on stage during a show. And I think it, if you're really, I'm guilty of this so much. So that's why I'm on this kick. But if you are relying on the audience member to make the routine work, then is it really working in the first place? Yeah. So that's my advice. If you can rewrite stuff to not bring people up on stage, do it. Try to make it more like a music show if you can.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like another way of phrasing that could be make sure that if you are going to bring someone up on stage, there's a really good reason to do it. And you're not just doing it as a crutch because you have nothing better to do.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the I've learned so much from doing ships in the past couple of years. And as I try to, you know, do less of them, I don't take it for granted because my show has got immensely better. But, you know, a lot of ships, you have very much older people that if you want to bring them up on stage, it's more of a challenge in the first place. So if you can just get rid of it altogether, it'll make the performance much more I think exciting and stronger.
Interesting. I mean, the obvious rebuttal to that is a show like Matt King's, most famously, that is almost entirely based around getting cool, interesting comedic interaction from people on stage. So I think it's one of those things that's obviously not an always universal thing. But again, I think he follows that rule of he has a really good reason to bring them all up. It's worth it. Like, it's actually the stuff he's doing with them is good enough and kind enough and gentle enough and, well, except for some bits, but still good natured enough.
Well, I don't think really Matt King's bringing people up on stage and then making them human props, which is kind of what what I've been guilty of, and I think a lot of people are guilty of. Gotcha. If you're just making them stand over here, that makes do this, more sense. Hold this.
Yeah, so don't bring people up on stage just to be human props. Bring them up on stage if it's actually going to be a quality interaction that's worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, right now my coin routine, my Miser's Dream, is completely guilty of that, and but I think in a weird way, because it's the only time I'm bringing somebody up as to be a human prop, I think it's okay because it plays into the gag. If I followed it up with something, then, okay, I need another volunteer to come up and hold this thing, then you start to realize that it is a crutch. And I don't know, maybe that's a cop-out, but I think as long as you're not doing the same thing over and over and just relying on people to hold stuff and stand there, then it, I don't know, makes a big difference.
Yeah, good thing to think about.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been kick-ass. I got to go get ready for shows. You've got to go and have your second cocktail and pass out, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I just finished this old fashioned, so I need another one.
Perfect. Well, this has been Two Magicians, One Mic. I've been Simon.
I'm Nick Paul. I hope your building doesn't burn down, Simon.
True that. Right back at you.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.